You're listening to the Champions Rugby Show. For this new podcast series, we're celebrating 25 years of the Heineken Champions Cup. I'm Martin Hindley, and we'll be speaking to the big-name players who have had such a huge impact on this tournament, and they don't come any better or faster than this guy.
Habana! Brian Habana settles his crowd down, settles the team down.
It's wide or trouble, big trouble, it's Habana. Too long will be in here.
A man belonging to a very select club, having not only won the Heineken Cup twice, but also completed the European and Super Rugby double. He was a Rugby World Cup winner in 2007, the IRB Player of the Year in 2011, and the man who took on a cheetah in a 100-metre sprint. Oh, and a plane for good measure. Joining us today from South Africa is one of the genuine global greats. A very big pleasure to be joined by Brian Habana.
Thank you very much, Martin.
First of all, Brian, how are you doing right now?
Thanks, Martin, for that introduction. It's been just under 2 years since retiring. One tends to forget what you were able to achieve and what was a pretty incredible time period for me. Again, as much as everyone is getting affected by the COVID-19 situation, I think sport in particular, or the lack of it, to be honest, as something that has affected people around the world, quite immensely. So, yeah, great to chat, and hopefully we can reminisce about what was some fantastic memories for me.
I mean, how are you coping being stuck inside? You're an incredibly busy, active man. It must be pretty strange for you.
It is very strange, actually. I've been saying, I think the last two or three days, on quite a few of the conference calls that I do go on, I've lost track of time. In South Africa, lockdown, we actually can't leave our house, so we can't even go for a daily run. So you're trying to become really ingenious about the type of training you're doing. I've got a 5, almost 6-year-old and a 2-year-old to entertain as well throughout the day. So it's trying to cope with the current situation. I think everyone realizes that we all need to play our part, not only in South Africa, but around the world. Need to play our part in this situation that has affected us all on so many different levels. And I think for me personally, I'll be brutally honest and say I haven't been incredibly great from a training regime since retiring. So to be able to at least give myself some daily tasks of doing a few push-ups or sit-ups or running around with the kids has actually been a nice change post the last 20-odd months. But yeah, really challenging. I think our medical staff and everyone fighting this thing on the front line deserves an incredible amount of thanks and gratitude for all the essential service workers, those putting their lives at risk. So I think if we as a human race can play our part as individuals, listening to the advice from the WHO, from the governments around the world, we can hopefully overcome this thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I've always wanted to ask you this as well, Brian. So before we go into the Heineken Cup memories, obviously the whole physical distancing thing doesn't quite lend itself to racing yourself against cheetahs and aeroplanes. I've always wanted to ask you how those things came about and how you prepared for those challenges as a sportsman, really.
They have been pretty wide varying, to be brutally honest. I think we all are trying to bide our time by doing various things. I'm involved in a corporate setup at the moment, so we've got a daily catch-up. But then social media has been alive with the challenges, which has been pretty interesting. I think this morning's one that I had to do of an upside down handstand, putting your shirt on. It was obviously something I never thought I would have to do.
I can't wait to see that. I'm going to have to keep a keener eye on your Insta account after all of this. But obviously we're celebrating 25 years of what is now the Heineken Champions Cup. That's the reason for this podcast. So can you start off by telling us just what the tournament means to you as a player and I suppose latterly as a television personality as well?
Yeah, I guess, sporting competitions around the world have great sense of value, not only for the supporters, not only for the players, but for the value it creates in bringing people together. I think one of the things we really appreciate about rugby is the values that come with it, the camaraderie, this respect, the dedication, the hard work. And I think for me, the Heineken Cup has sort of been one of the high-level competitions globally that has set a standard about where the game can go to. But also brings about a fantastic element of, supporters embracing the competition. I think, having grown up in the Southern Hemisphere, having started my career playing Super Rugby, know, to see the traveling supporters across Europe go to different destinations and back their teams, and to see the camaraderie that's formed, not only by the players, but by the surrounds in the stadium, outside the stadium, you know, people making weekends out of it, traveling to the south of France or, you know, to the north of England. And I think the beauty about the Heineken Cup, you know, bar, I think the incredible high level of actual rugby that gets played and being able to be crowned, you know, European champion and have that prestigious title, I think the camaraderie and the actual enjoyment of the competition is so, so special. And I'm extremely grateful, you know, that I got to not only play in it, that you get to have a period where we were so successful at Toulon, but to get to experience those friendships, to get to experience Toulon fans backing their team, supporting their team through the good times and the bad times, and to see that being reciprocated by the opposition supporters as well is absolutely brilliant. And just seeing, you know, that environment in Heineken Champions Cup is extremely special. And I think something that does make that competition so, so unique.
You had some South African teammates in Toulon who had experienced that success with you in Super Rugby. Did it help you to settle and really get a quick feel for what it was all about in the south of France?
I think it did. It definitely helps when you have those around you that make you feel comfortable, that make you fit in as quickly as possible. And as grateful as I am for, you know, the South Africans like Bucky Sporta, John Smith, Donny Rousseau, Mike Clausen, Joe Fenikic that were there, I think, you know, we were really lucky at Toulon in the fact that we had such a wide international base, but we also had a really strong core group of French players that were willing to help and make us feel as comfortable as possible. And, you know, we had an ongoing joke in that, you know, we'd sometimes try to speak French to the French players and they'd immediately respond in English. And we didn't know if it was because our French was so bad or if they wanted to practice their English. But, you know, I just think that ability to be accepted into a culture that is foreign to you, but to also be made feel welcome. And I think for us, especially at Toulon, is the fact that our supporters are of the most incredible supporters I've ever seen. You know, from coming to training sessions to the little gateway they make for us coming into a Stade Mayol before every game, to those that travel. And I think for us as players, we were incredibly grateful that the actual town of Toulon embraced the rugby in such a way in which it made it extremely special.
Toulon had won the Heineken Cup for the first time in 2013, just months before you joined. Did that add any pressure? Did you arrive thinking you could add certain qualities to the team? I mean, what were your thoughts when you arrived?
So on signing for Toulon, and again, it happened, you know, 6 months before I actually joined the club, I sat down with Bernard Laporte. I was unfortunately injured for the 2012 end of year tour, but got to do some things over in Europe, and actually had a sit down with Bernard Laporte in a, I wouldn't say a dodgy hotel in London, because we had to try to keep the cat in the bag as much as possible, but in a hotel that, you know, wasn't open to many public people. And I think, you know, just hearing Bernard's thoughts about where he wanted to take the club, you know, how the club had started to show signs of success. And yes, they lost the top 14 final of the previous season, but, you know, Bernard had an incredible drive to want to start achieving success. And he really felt that, you know, they were on this journey to do that. And he needed certain players in key positions to get this machine as well as possible. And, you know, you don't just arrive there because you're a name. You arrive there because you need to contribute to the success of the team. And I think for me, that was a drive. You know, I was also at a point in my international career where I still wanted to play international rugby. So it sort of gave me a three-year plan to put my own short-term and long-term goals in place, but also be involved in a team that had some absolute world-class players that could take my game further. And even though I could contribute, it was about learning even more and trying to develop myself as a rugby player, you know, making sure that I can internationally be of a standard that can make me continue be, you know, in the Springbok setup.
That was, it was a team that was described by one of your teammates on social media the other day as being like the all-star team. Did it feel like every team was desperate to beat you as the holders of the Heineken Cup as you went through that first season?
Yeah, I think, you know, Martin, what actually did happen was that when I got there, and I think the pressure was already on the team because, you know, they started winning the Challenge Cup environment. They started doing really well in the top 14. And, you know, when you get into that position of strength, you know, people want to measure themselves up against you. And we've seen that, you know, with the All Blacks in the 20 odd years that the game has been professional as well, that you always chase the number one. And I think for us as a team, what is really special is that we never relaxed on our laurels. You know, we constantly had critique about being players that were past their sell-by date, you know, players that had just arrived for, you know, the severance package that Lon was offering. And even though those things, you know, played a part in making a decision to go to the South of France, I think the drive within that side and having, you know, someone like Johnny Wilkinson, who from a work ethic perspective was incredible, you know, having people that were still incredibly hungry to not only play rugby but to win trophies was something that we all really respected. And again, that drive on a daily basis, not wanting to let your teammate down, not wanting to let yourself down, but wanting to contribute to something that we all really believe can become extremely special, was, I believe, something that garnered that period of strength in that, you know, we weren't mercenaries. We were people wanting to show the world how good we still were, and produce results week in and week out. And I think that drive was something that never left anyone.
We were speaking in an earlier edition of the Champions Rugby Show to a man who was crowned European Player of the Year that season, Stefan Armitage. He told us that Johnny Wilkinson, the club captain, of course, was able to manage the egos around the camp if they were getting too confident at times. What was Johnny like as a captain at Toulon? I mean, how did you find him?
Yeah, I think as a captain at Toulon during in his last season, my first season at the club, I think, you know, arriving in Toulon, having played against Johnny quite a few times in my career at international level, and just knowing what he had achieved, you know, I had absolutely no idea before arriving how revered he was within the South of France. You know, I heard stories of 10,000 Toulon supporters arriving, you know, at the stadium for his first training session. You know, you'd heard all these things, but, you know, I had no concept of just how much he was adored. And I think for us as players, you know, having someone from a dedication and a work ethic perspective who was of the standard that Johnny Wilkinson was, and I think for us as players, you know, having someone like that as a catalyst, who had been accepted by the French public and especially the Toulon supporters, but who had, you know, taken up the language, you know, in his first 6 or 7 months there. So he was, I wouldn't say he was 100% fluent, but he was, you know, as good as it gets. And being able to have that two-way communication between international players, between the French players, and make sure that everyone was on the same page. You know, I don't think we will ever potentially in the game of rugby see God Save the Queen being played at Stade de France for one player in particular. And if that doesn't give you an idea or scope into how revered he was within France, again, nothing will.
Well, you beat Munster in the semi-final largely due to the boot of Johnny, and then it was on to the Heineken Cup final against Saracens in Cardiff, a convincing win on the score sheet. But what do you remember about the sense of occasion and what you really felt through that day?
Yeah, so for me, that probably wasn't the biggest highlight of my career. Obviously, there was a moment in that game that, you know, I, you know, didn't do the, you know, the real values and respect of rugby. And I think, you know, obviously not remembered for me personally in the right way. But I think, you know, for someone like Johnny, for the team that had now started building over that 3-4 year period, to get to that point, to be able to overcome a Saracens side who were developing as one of the real strongholds in European rugby, being in, you know, in that Millennium Stadium and getting to do something that we had all actually gone to the club to do was incredibly special.
The moment for the man is about the club. Toulon loves Johnny. Johnny loves Toulon. And they both love winning the Heineken Cup.
To have Johnny, again, we didn't know if it was going to be his last season or not, but to then have to find out a few weeks later that Johnny was going to be retiring, and to have him sign off his European journey on such a note, for us all had an incredible sense of, you know, perspective in being able to have contributed to that, you know, being able to have contributed to him getting the European send-off that he deserved, and in a way that we all played our part in getting there. And again, that sense of occasion of standing there, knowing you've been acclaimed as the best team in Europe, that you've gone on this journey as a group of players, as a town, to get to this position and stand there as the title holders was incredibly special.
You could well be the reason Toulon were able to make history in this tournament with three consecutive wins. Your intercept try against Leinster in Marseille that secured a 25-20 extra time victory. A huge moment, not just for you and for Toulon, but also for the history of what is now the Heineken Champions Cup. How much were you aware of its significance at the time?
Yeah, the game in Marseille was pretty special. I think, you know, being able to play in a city that's just down the road from a place you now call home, to have our supporters, you know, being able to get there in their droves in comparison to the Leinster supporters, and, you know, to have gone into extra time, you sort of know how much of a balance the game is in. And I think for me personally, it's not that I want to say I wasn't, you know, at my best for Toulon, but to be able to make as big an impact in that particular game that saw us then, you know, go through to, you know, to the final against Clermont, and eventually win it. But so it was this roller coaster, and I don't think one player's contribution was bigger than anyone else's. You know, there were key moments in that game that actually allowed us to, you know, to keep that stronghold on Leinster. You know, credit to Leinster in coming down to foreign territory and, you know, put up a game that will be remembered for its physicality, for the way it was in which it was played. And it was, you know, extremely challenging to come out victorious on that day.
Last play of this first period of extra time. This is going to Habana just stepped in. You do not give it to Brian Habana. Not in those situations. Agonising for Leinster. It was like the action replay happened in real time. And there's nothing slow motion about Habana when he gets his hands on the ball.
I think for me, something that a lot of people might not know is it gave me the opportunity to go to Bernard Laporte after that game, and after being denied an opportunity to go to South Africa to be at my brother's side for his wedding, Bernard became a lot more at ease to send me back home, miss a week of training and be with my family.
That's a brilliant story. And a brilliant story. And you mentioned there about Marseille, obviously. It's the venue for the next finals of the European rugby tournaments. Is it as special for the players to go to a venue like that as it is to the fans to have a weekend out? I mean, how did you find it back in those days?
As a player, going to Marseille, it was, you know, being in Toulon was really easy. It was, you know, just over a 45-50 minute drive down there. You know, as a town, there's, you know, quite a few enjoyable scenic spots. And I think for me, there's a bit more of a history. You know, we played against Fiji there in the 2007 Rugby World Cup, a game that'll also be remembered, you know, as one of the nail biters in Rugby World Cup history, where, you know, 20 points all with 20 minutes to go. It was truly in the balance, and a fantastic tackle by JP Peterson against the Fijian lock in that right hand corner. You know, probably saw us, you know, deservedly go through to the semis. I've sat in that stadium, unfortunately, while injured, but, you know, as a fan sitting in that stadium and watching Toulon play, and again, you know, you sort of on, you know, as a fan, you're on the almost right next to the field, and it just feels as a player that you're being encompassed or engulfed by this huge amount of support, which is extremely amazing. And I think, you know, being able to host the final of the season Champions Cup is going to be incredibly special.
You had a victory again over Clermont-Auvergne in 2015. You were part of the Toulon side to lift that third European Cup in a row. The first match that you played in the tournament was at the age of 30. And then all of a sudden, you were part of making such monumental history. How did it feel to be a part of all that?
To have been a part of that journey and to sort of now, you know, once the boots have been hung up and be able to reflect on that journey. Again, I wasn't initially there when they beat the ISM in Dublin in that first year, but, you know, you sort of knew that you're now part of a team that has created history.
This lot don't come cheap, but what a collection of jewels they are. A hat-trick, 2013, 2014, 2015. Toulon, once again, European champions, the first ever winners of the Champions Cup.
Again, looking back and reflecting and seeing the part you played, the contribution you made, you know, you sort of sit here, and I've got a friend that, you know, was involved a lot of my rugby, and he said, once everything's done and dusted, you know, all we have are the memories. And I think for me, being able to reflect on that, being able to recall those memories, those contributions that you played in a team that became, you know, one of the most revered and supported in Europe, and the dominance that they had for that period was incredibly special. As a player, you know, when I first put on that Springbok jersey for the first time, I didn't just want to be around for a season or two. I wanted to contribute, you know, for as long as possible. And then to know that towards the end of my career, I was still able to do that with a team that, you know, you got to form bonds and friendships with that you can keep for a lifetime, but have those memories that, you know, you can pass on to your kids. Actually, funny enough, watched, you know, watched that Leinster game with my two little boys, you know, I think 3 or 4 days ago. And again, them seeing that moment, you know, them seeing their dad play a part of such an incredible occasion, you know, it's something that you can only dream of. And that's, again, I'm so grateful that I got to be a rugby player, that I got to play the game professionally, and that I get to leave the sport with so many memories, because at the end of the day, that's all you have. And you can look back on those memories and smile and share them with your loved ones. Yeah, you're sitting in a pretty decent place.
Now, your Twitter bio says this, former egg chaser now discovering the real world, but it isn't quite like that, is it? You're not lost to rugby, still working on with Channel 4 on the Heineken Champions Cup coverage, as well as a number of other projects. And it was a pleasure to be joined by you at the pool draws in Lausanne as you mapped out this season's tournament. Now that you look at the Heineken Champions Cup from a different perspective, how do you view that the way that the tournament has continued to develop?
I think it's been absolutely brilliant for me to, Martin, like you say, still be involved in the game in some capacity. I think, you know, what I try to bring from a television coverage perspective is, you know, a real, you know, sense of personality. You know, I think it's always difficult to want to criticize and, you know, break players down. And I think for me, just trying to bring an enjoyable aspect to that, because as a player, you always hated sitting on the sidelines and, you know, hearing X or all players talk about what could have been or what should have been. So I think trying to bring a humane element in that has been incredibly special. I think seeing the actual level of the Heineken Champions Cup and even the Heineken Challenge Cup, you know, seeing the best clubs in Europe trying to fight for that title of, you know, being crowned the best in Europe, of trying to, you know, on this lengthy time period, you know, go through the different roles of playing in your local competition, but then also playing in Europe and trying to balance that and seeing the type of rugby, the level of rugby, and again, some incredible moments that are brought to the TV screens around the world. I've seen a lot of the Southern Hemisphere countries now really engage in that European competition from an audience perspective. And I think that shows how much the competition has grown. You know, I think when I started playing, you know, Heineken Cup was something you only saw highlights of. You know, now all of a sudden it's being shown on TV screens around the world. And the level of competition has almost got people debating whether it's stronger than Super Rugby.
Whether in the Springbok jerseys or club jerseys, whether on television or through your various business ventures, there are hundreds of thousands of kids out there who've been inspired by Brian Habana. What message would you give to those kids now on how to make it to the top?
I'd probably first say don't ever race against cheetahs or aeroplanes. But no, I think, you know, Martin, as professional rugby players, you know, you're extremely grateful for the platform you've given to be able to not only live out your dreams, you know, earn a incredible salary from it, but have the opportunity to inspire. And I think for us as role models, you know, you get an opportunity to be an example. You get an opportunity to make a difference. And I think, unfortunately, not everyone can become professional athletes, you know, male, female, able body, disabled body. You know, everyone has these incredible dreams. And I think it's really difficult to always give sound advice because there are just so many that wanna make it, but only a select few that do. And I think something, you know, I grew up when the game was probably still unprofessional. You know, I think I went to gym for the first time ever when I was 18 years old. And all of a sudden now you got kids doing video analysis at the age of 14. And I think a piece of advice, and I struggled with it at times throughout my career, is to never forget the reason you actually picked up the game or picked up the sport. You know, I think the game has become so much more professional from such a younger age because people want to, you know, make a profession out of it. But, you know, sometimes you go through your professional career and you absolutely forget why you picked up the game. And again, with the rise of social media, with the rise of critique being so much more available and so much more open, you know, it's now a daily grind of being able to make sure you're not putting your foot in the wrong place. But I think for me, you know, stuff like hard work, stuff like discipline, sacrifice is unfortunately a non-negotiable if you want to make it at the highest level. But never to forget why you started whatever professional sport you want to try to achieve. Because I think for all of us, that enjoyment, you know, if you can keep a sense of that throughout your whole career, to be able to know that you've enjoyed each and every moment of it because of the platform that you've been given is something, you know, I'd really encourage anyone wanting to become a professional athlete to try and never forget.
Some very sound and special advice there. And for the quickest man, arguably, in the history of rugby, it's probably fair to finish with a few quick-fire questions, a few tricky ones as well. So on your marks. First of all, rugby or soccer?
Oh, Martin, you can't start with the question. I'm named after Brian Robson and Gary Bailey. So I'm going to unfortunately go rugby, but soccer played a part. Rugby, sorry.
I knew that would be a tough one. And a few of these are as hard as any of the finals that you've played in as well. Next one, 19 on the sofa or big night out?
Ooh. Oh, no, that was much harder. I'm going to go 19 on the sofa.
They don't get any easier, I'm afraid, Brian. Pizza or salad?
Definitely pizza.
Good choice. Beer or wine?
Wine.
Oh, I won't tell Heineken. We might edit that bit out. Beach holiday or ski holiday?
Ooh, I've just had a few ski holidays and I absolutely love it. But I'm going to go beach holiday. I don't enjoy the cold. And again, being on those beaches, and there are so many around the world, there's nothing that beats it.
Johnny Wilkinson or Dan Carter?
Oh, no, you can't do this to me. No. Equal tie.
I knew you'd bail out of one somewhere. Maybe, as long as it's not the next one. Brian Habana or Jonah Lomu?
Jonah Lomu. The reason I say that is, you know, Jonah changed the game like no other player ever has. And I was fortunate enough to be a part of that 95 Rugby World Cup experience, you know, a moment that was a watershed one in my life in terms of having never played the game before, but then being inspired by the 95 Springbok team that actually went on to win it. But I'll never forget going into the New Zealand or All Black hotel and getting Jonah's autograph, and just, you know, what he did for the game was incredibly special. And I don't think I'd ever be as great as I was to have the rugby as a sport. I don't think anyone has had an impact in the game like Jonah did.
Brian, it's been an absolute pleasure going back through memory lane about your thoughts and your career, and also your memories from what is now the Heineken Champions Cup. Thank you for all that you've given back to the sport, not just during your career, but after it as well. And we look forward to following the many new chapters. Thank you very much, Brian.
Thank you very much, Martin. Look, yeah, thank you very much for recalling those memories and, you know, years to even more and greater Heineken Champions Cup and Challenge Cup moments.
Habana! Brian Habana!
Trouble, big trouble, it's Habana.
And there's nothing slow motion about Habana when he gets his hands on the ball.
A fascinating insight from Brian Habana, one of the greatest rugby players ever to play the game. He's spoken about the history of the Heineken Champions Cup, Marseille as a sensational rugby venue, his debut in the gym as a teenager, Jonah Lomu's wonderful legacy, and much, much more. Please subscribe to our Champions Rugby Show podcast using your favorite podcast provider. Leave us a review if you can as well, and let us know which players you want to come on the show next to share their stories from a quarter of a century of the history of what is now the Heineken Champions Cup. From me, Martin Hindley, and from all the team, until next time, it's goodbye.